This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, you have downloaded the Sinner and Saint Podcast.
The Sinner and Saint Podcast.
Brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers.
Local Les Schwab Tire Center.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
Enjoy. Ducks.
Give to Freeman. He's got space off the right side, and there he goes. Running past Ouzier. Running past everybody. Touchdown, Royce Freeman.
Beavers.
He has the football, and he's got a touchdown, Oregon State. What an impressive opening drive for the Beavers.
The Sinner.
We're going to talk about my poll right
now.
We can. I mean, we can stay on this topic. I have no problem with that.
The Saint.
The gamble, the cheating, the anger towards the media. Was it worth it in the end?
This is the Sinner and the Saint, the College Game Day Edition, powered by Frost Brewed Coors Light, exclusive beer partner of the Oregon Ducks, and the exclusive beer partner of the Oregon State Beavers. Coors Light reminds you to drink responsibly on game day.
He's going for the corner! He's got it!
The Sinner and the Saint on 1080 The Fan.
Portland, welcome to the Sinner and Saint. Keith Hill, Luke Anderson here on this College Football Saturday. Is it Redemption Saturday for the Ducks, or is it every nightmare finally coming true for Duck fans?
No, it's a down season for the Ducks. It's a freshman quarterback starting. It's a top defense in the Pac-12, one of the top 10 defenses in the country. It's fun to go and play this, you know, this new exciting game. The world is crashing in, and Mark Helfrich is the worst coach ever, and how could he not win with two different quarterbacks, three different quarterbacks, four different quarterbacks in the last 2 years, and it's
which is his call, right?
Well, not necessarily. You didn't have a choice with Vernon Adams and Jeff Lockie. Jeff Lockie was your backup when Vernon Adams got hurt, so you played two quarterbacks last year. Lockie was terrible. Vernon Adams was quite good. Dakota Prukop came in the spring, which was different than what Vernon Adams did. He won the spot coming out of spring camp, and then you have Justin Herbert, who earned his way up to the second spot in fall camp, and by all measures has improved as the season's gone on in practices.
Sure.
And now you have a guy in Dakota Prukop who doesn't make the right decision all the time and can't make a big throw at the end of a game. And you go, oh, maybe we should possibly go to the kid, which we talked about last week, isn't necessarily the move you make when you think you have a chance to compete for the Pac-12 North, but it feels like they don't. So
right.
You go, you know, let's put in a freshman. Let's have a guy that can get some game experience this year, and then next year, hopefully, I still have a job and I can develop a quarterback over time, which he hasn't been able to do.
By choice. Well, now, no, I'm going to argue that because I will tell you, when you bring in fifth-year transfers,
sure,
and you bring in transfers from other schools, you are making the choice not to develop a quarterback.
Okay,
and that's a fine strategy. It can work. But
yeah,
you are making that decision. So you can't say, oh, I'm so unlucky and it's so unfortunate that I don't have any quarterback development when you made the decision not to develop quarterback.
I understand that, but if the quarterback you were developing was Jeff Lockie, we saw what happened when he played last year. If you felt
you're telling me that with more experience and more quarterback coaching and more opportunity, Jeff Lockie couldn't have been a reasonable starter?
From what we saw, no, I don't think he could
get
have
that
been.
Experience.
I don't think he could have been. He's a placeholder now for field goals. He was in a position where that was your guy after Mariota left. And you looked and you went, oh, we're not going to win a whole lot of games. Is there anybody else out there in college football that we can bring in? So they went out and got Vernon Adams.
Now that's a completely wrong analysis of what happened. They went for Vernon Adams from the moment.
Yes, because they knew
during
who was on their team.
But you're acting like, okay, we don't know what we're going to do. So now we're going to go and at the last second grab Vernon Adams. They recruited him for 2 years.
Again, that's because they knew what they had in their pipeline.
For 2 years.
Yes.
Then you're doing a bad job recruiting.
That's just fine. That is not choice, though. That is something where you go, all right, this is the way we've been operating.
You don't choose who to recruit?
of course you choose who to recruit, but you're saying that it's a choice that the guys we picked intentionally by choice were terrible.
No, I'm saying the choices you make were bad choices, and that's on you for making bad choices.
No, Vernon Adams was a good choice based on what you had in your pipeline.
Not longevity. That's my point, that if instead of getting for fifth-year transfers and making this settling and saying, you know what, we're going to go fifth-year guy, we're going to go fifth-year guy, we're going to go JUCO transfer, we're going to go fifth-year guy.
If you make a bad choice.
Instead of doing that, grab a quarterback, because when you've got a guy like Marcus Mariota, who just won the Heisman. Let me tell you something. Every quarterback in the country wants to come and play here.
Sure.
So you should have been able to go get a five-star blue chip to come in and run this Oregon offense. You look at it. It is the most exciting offense in all of college football.
Right.
You've got more facilities. You've got more uniforms. You've got a Heisman Trophy winner. You've got two national championship games in the recent future.
Recent past.
Sorry. So you've got all these things going for you. Why can't you go get that top five guy?
Ask Alabama, ask Auburn. They won a national championship. Who's their quarterback right now?
Do you think it's easy to go out
and evaluate high school quarterbacks and you go automatically, this guy's going to come into our program. He's going to be our savior. He's going to be the next Marcus Mariota. No, they're rare.
But that's
These talents
what I said.
Are rare. No, what you said is they chose to have Jeff Lockie come in and not be a proper replacement for Marcus Mariota. You said that they didn't go out and get anybody. Travis Johnson was hurt. You make a bad choice in life. You go out and you make something that seems like a good choice at the time, which is this is a pipeline of quarterbacks we have at Oregon. You realize you made it a poor choice. So what do? You go out and you find a guy that's going to be available, a graduate transfer from Eastern Washington. If Vernon Adams was healthy last year, they maybe win 11 games. There's
sure.
at least two
and
games.
Still don't
there.
Have a quarterback in the pipeline.
I understand that, but right now you are making choices based on things that didn't work out the way you planned it. You can call those bad choices, or you can say that we are correcting as we go, which seem to be good choices. If Dakota Prukop can throw the ball where only your receiver can get it against Colorado, even if that's an incomplete pass, then you at least have a chance to play another down. If he decides on a 4th-and-14 against Nebraska to maybe get the ball in the air and let one of your great wide receivers go up and get it, you throw it where it's a jump ball between Darren Carrington and anybody on that Colorado defense, you've at least got a shot to get a first down. Instead, he falls down into the interior line and gets. So you have a guy that, by all accounts, a guy that's recruited by as a graduate transfer to Alabama, to USC, to all of these schools, and he decides to go to Oregon. That means you do have leverage and power that exactly what you said, that you get from having a guy like Marcus Mariota. If your best option is a fifth-year graduate transfer, you go out and you get him. And
but if your best option is that way, it's because the program, in my opinion, is pointed the wrong direction.
Again,
what I want to focus on in just this moment is that coming off of Mariota and the national championship appearance, you had more opportunity than any school in the country to go and get a quarterback. And that's my complaint about Helfrich, is that he has not been that top-tier recruiter. Ever since, I mean, we can go back and we can talk about Willie Lyles.
Ever since Willie Lyles.
And we can talk about that as well. But ever since Chip Kelly left, this has been Mark Helfrich's team that he runs on Chip Kelly's system with Chip Kelly's players. And when Chip Kelly's players started to leave, he didn't replace them with quality players. And the program has taken a step backwards.
Mark Helfrich recruited Marcus Mariota, a 3-star quarterback from Hawaii, as the offensive coordinator, went out and said, this is the guy that we need to have. Mark Helfrich did. He was there.
But it was Chip Kelly's close.
What's that?
He might have been there, but it's Chip Kelly's clothes and Chip Kelly's system.
He's still the guy that brought him in, and he's the one that was the coach when Marcus Mariota won a Heisman Trophy. He was the guy that was there when Marcus Mariota took the Ducks to a national championship game 2 years ago. If it was easy to restock the cupboard at quarterback, then you'd see it happen at the best programs in the country. Last year, Everett Golson was a quarterback that replaced Jameis Winston. It wasn't somebody they had in their pipeline at Florida State who went undefeated and won a national championship, then played in the college football playoff the next year with a
and
guy.
And you know what? They had 2 5-stars that came in and they brought Golson to close the gap. And if that's what was happening, I would feel better about that. If Vernon Adams was the guy between 5-stars, while you've got a really great, you know, 19-year-old kid who you're not ready to play, have him sit and hold the clipboard, I'm fine with that. But that's not happening.
5-stars don't always pan out. You go out and you get the guys, and Mark Helfrich has had the idea that you go out and you get athletes and you get guys that can play multiple positions. Travis Johnson was a guy that they brought in that they expected to compete for a position last year, and he was hurt. And then that means you go to Jeff Lockie and Tyler Alley, which is not a good second and third option. And again, if Vernon Adams stays healthy, that's a brilliant move to go out and get a guy that's among the best quarterbacks in college football that has availability to transfer after he graduates from Eastern Washington. So it's maybe not the ideal situation because of the result. But again, if he stays healthy and can hit Byron Marshall on a what seems like a very easy throw, but he has a broken finger and misses him against Michigan State, that's a win. You have him and at full strength against
Utah. I'm not arguing that Vernon Adams wasn't a reasonable quarterback.
Yeah.
But I will say, for all the hype, where's he playing today?
He was a good college quarterback.
Right.
We can go through the list of great college quarterbacks that don't play in the NFL.
But my point is that if in this scenario, you've got Vernon Adams, great. He's your stopgap. Who did you go and recruit? Who did you go and sign? Josh Rosen was on the board.
Sure.
Couldn't close it.
Josh Rosen was next door neighbors with Jim Mora when he was in high school. You think UCLA has an advantage to get that kid?
Sure.
And they play in Los Angeles.
But with facilities and Heisman trophies and national championship appearances, you need to be the best recruiter in the Pac-12. And I'll tell you what, when they fire Mark Helfrich, and I'm calling it now, they will fire Mark Helfrich this year.
Okay.
When they do, they better go get somebody who can close some kids and bring this program to the expectations of the recent past.
Chip Kelly.
Better do it.
Yeah,
hey, you know what?
Get Chip Kelly.
He might be out there.
The best recruiter in the Pac-12 will always be USC. USC can't find a coach. They can't find a winning formula. They can't figure anything out down there. They will always be.
Sure.
You talk about the history of a program. It's a recent history for Oregon. It is the history of college football for USC. They have put more players in the NFL. They have won more Heisman trophies. They have more national championships than anybody in the Pac-12 by a lot. The second best recruiter should be UCLA because they have the same advantage. The third should always be Washington because you have a beautiful campus in Seattle. You talk about facilities. You talk about a fan base that will surround them. They've been terrible for two decades after winning a national championship, but they should have every advantage. Eugene, as great as it is with all the Nike money, they are catching up to the rest of the Pac-12 over the history of these programs, and they have been at the top for a relatively short time when you look at it. But Eugene does not have the advantages of a major city, and there's three teams that play in huge markets,
you know who else
and they should
have
always
that?
Have an advantage.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Yeah, they
Fayetteville,
play in the SEC.
Arkansas. You go place after place that are terrible cities. That is not the answer.
You live in the South. You're telling me that the West Coast has the same interest in football as Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and Gainesville, Florida.
Well, to your great point, the fantastic move was grabbing Dakota Prukop, who chose Eugene over Tuscaloosa.
Yeah,
so it can happen.
Obviously, it's a better move than anybody you have in the pipeline because he beat everybody out coming in. Alabama wanted Dakota Prukop. If you have a better option, you go for it, and they're going for Justin Herbert because he seems to be a better option. Again, the choices you make, no matter how smart they seem at the time, often turn out in a different way than you expected. So what you do is you make another choice to correct that. They've been able to do that, and that shows that they do have a recruiting advantage.
How have they been able to do that?
They went out and got Vernon Adams because they felt like they didn't have the right guys in the pipeline. They went out and got Dakota Prukop because they felt like
that's
they didn't have
correcting.
It again.
That's going
yes, it is. You're
further down the wrong street.
Just because it doesn't work doesn't mean it's a bad idea at the time.
Oh, I see. So when we make bad decisions and they don't pan out, they're actually good decisions.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying...
Help me understand them.
Yes, absolutely. What you do is you make corrective actions based on what's available to you, right? And do they always work out? No, you have 128 teams, which really they're not all competing for a national championship, but you've got this huge recruiting landscape, and assuming that every time you go out and sign a five-star kid that he's going to turn into Jameis Winston.
But when you sign more five-stars than three-stars, typically your program is better. As a matter of fact, the last 14 national champions have assigned more five-stars and four-stars than threes, twos, and ones combined.
And how many times has Oregon been in the top five in recruiting?
Never.
There you go. Even with Chip Kelly,
never won a national championship.
Yes, it's easy to say, well, all they have to do is be a top five recruiter. Guess what? There's a lot of competition
top five.
For that.
I didn't say top five. Right now, they are 41st. They are third in the Pac-12.
Sure.
So you've got to finish first in the Pac-12 and easily in the top 20 if you really want to compete. And Mark Helfrich cannot do that. That is my point.
Okay. And
he's
who's going to come to Eugene? And Eugene's never done that either.
That's not true. Chip Kelly had three classes in the top 20. Three.
All right.
So, all right. When we come back, we're going to talk Washington, Oregon. We're going to talk about, do the Oregon Ducks have a chance? And did a hurricane just keep the SEC out of the college football playoff? We'll talk more of this when we come back. Center and Saint, 1080, The Fan. Portland, welcome back. Center and Saint, 1080 The Fan. I want to get to some of your thoughts on the text line because there's a lot of them. But I'll ask the question. Oregon fans, Mark Helfrich,
Good choices, bad choices. How would you rate his coaching as a whole? And I mean recruiting, I mean play calling, I mean program as a whole. How would you rate him as your head coach? Let us know. 55305. Lots of thoughts. They need to break the top 15 recruit class to compete, but in the mediocre Pac-12, maybe just the top 25. That's from the 775. I think Dakota chose Oregon because Alabama hasn't turned out a decent NFL quarterback in a generation. That's from P1 Raymond. And I look so forward to Saturdays and the best radio show, The Sinner and the Saint. Love me some Sinner and Saint and Will. That's from Patty. We love Patty. So we want to hear your thoughts on this and what are you thinking going into game day. But we do have a game today, Luke.
We
get to talk about the matchup. Oregon's got quite the win streak on the line here today. Is there a scenario, because I see a couple of scenarios where it continues, do you see one that's feasible today against this Washington team?
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, and if you compare the way that Washington plays to the way that Stanford plays compared to the way that Arizona plays,
right.
I think a lot of people have short memories. Again, kind of goes back to our last conversation. They forget that Helfrich took you to a national championship and recruited Royce Freeman and you know, built this team and the strength around it. Because you had a couple bad seasons. And to your point, I mean, yeah, it's not an ideal situation to have graduate transfer quarterbacks each year, and you're kind of rebuilding your program, hoping the guys that have the courage to do it. But people also forget that 2 weeks ago, you had Washington playing an overtime game with Arizona. Arizona's a lot more interesting to me as a comparison to the Ducks than Stanford is. Stanford is a big team on the offensive and defensive line, and they want to go out and they want to play a physical game. That's kind of what Washington wants to do too. I mean,
right.
they've got a defensive line that can rush three and put pressure on the quarterback, which makes it a lot easier for the rest of their defense.
I have not seen anybody else in college football that can rush three and get to the quarterback as consistently as I watch these Washington Huskies.
Eight sacks against Stanford with very few blitzes, if any.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, they have. Since Chris Peterson's been there, he inherited a defense that had a lot of NFL talent on
it,
and he's restocked the shelf. So, I mean, they haven't had
because he's a good recruiter.
Because he has the facilities in Seattle. I think you have a distinct advantage if you're recruiting to the Huskies facilities versus the Ducks.
I will speak more to Keith's point that yes, Chris Peterson is an incredible recruiter. The fact that he could find people like Austin Pettis at Boise State and compete on a national level. I mean, now that you, and to your point as well, now that you have the perfect storm of putting his recruiting prowess with the ability to live in Seattle and have multi-million dollar stadium, it's the perfect storm.
Well, he also has the experience too. I mean, you bring up the Boise State thing. Helfrich came in as an offensive coordinator. Yeah. I mean, he was never a head coach. He was never a program builder. And Boise State had some momentum when Chris Peterson got there. He didn't do it all himself, but he was also, you know, for a decade coaching one of the top, you know, lower level programs and making the best out of a situation where you can't necessarily compete against recruiting, but he beat Chip Kelly twice.
So I assume you're going to give the coaching edge today to Peterson and Washington. How else do you see the game breaking down?
Well, yeah, and I wouldn't. And if it's a close game, I give them a big edge too. Because if you look at what happens in close games, but I think the way
I can't remember seeing the Ducks as a 10-point dog at home ever. Like this is the biggest spread I've seen them playing at home since I've lived here.
Sure. And it's a betting line, which means you're looking at perceptions. But the way Oregon wins this game is they get the ball to their athletes in space. You have Royce Freeman, you know, pound the ball as much as he
can. Between the tackles, right?
Between the tackles, but also, I mean, if he can bounce it outside and he's going against smaller defenders, maybe between the tackles isn't the best spot for him. But if you can get him the ball outside where he's not trying to run over an NFL defensive line, and you get him outside where you don't rely on your four true freshmen on your offensive line to open holes for you. You find a way to, you know, run a lot of student body right, student body left, get your big guys against their small guys, and maybe have a chance.
Well, and here's the other piece is, what does it do to Washington having no film on Herbert?
No,
I mean, saying that this kid, I mean, again, it's going to be a big moment. There's going to be, you know, 60,000 strong, louder, going crazy inside of Autzen today, and you've got a big rivalry game. And I don't care what you say. I think Oregon UW is maybe the most contentious rivalry in the Pac-12. To me, it's right up there. You know, certainly, you talk to the UW guys, they want this one as bad as they want the Apple Cup. So in this big of a game, in this moment, with that kind of a style, do you trust a 19-year-old under center?
Until last year, there wasn't a game between Oregon and Washington that was within 17 points. Oregon has beat them up and beat them down. So right now, it's kind of that perfect storm where it turns it into much more of a rivalry because Oregon has had a bad start to this season. I don't think there's any other way around it. They've started just as badly as they possibly could. Those are the three losses. Actually, maybe only two of those you thought could be losses. Colorado beat them up pretty good compared to what I expected preseason. But Oregon's as bad as they've been in a decade. Washington's as good as they've been in a decade. So this rivalry, for the most part, hasn't been a battle back and forth like Stanford, Oregon has been. So right now you've got a chance where if you're Oregon, yeah, you've got a freshman going out there, but all it comes down to is poise and his decision making.
Right.
You have to trust your weapons.
And if you're Helfrich, you've got to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. You've got to have the first 10, 15 plays scripted. You've got to keep it simple, easy, single reads, yep. Making sure that you've got it as easy as possible for this young man, because there's the weight of the world is on his shoulders.
I don't think he loses a lot in a close loss. I think he could, his ego could be shattered by an absolute beatdown. And if he's under duress all day and ends up at the bottom of a pile of purple all day, it's going to be really ugly, and it's going to be difficult to overcome that. I said that he should have played last week against Washington State.
Sure.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, you get him a little bit of a running start because at least you get out there and you get more reps. I mean, throwing him up against the best defense in the Pac-12 as his first start seems like a pretty difficult task. But again, it's about his decision-making and his poise, and I think that's what tells you what he's going to be in the future. He doesn't have to win this game to win over that locker room. He needs to go out there and make throws and make decisions in the moment, whether it's, a tough run in a third and short situation, or if it's being able to convert third downs. It just give them that feeling that this could be the guy. And if he goes out there and lights a world on fire, I mean, boy, Duck Nation is just going to go crazy, because
you
can push this season aside and go, hey, we've got a quarterback of the future. They made a good choice and made a good recruiting move to go out and get the local kid.
I totally agree. And I will say this too. They don't even have to win today.
Absolutely not.
If Herbert goes out and has a really strong game, and strong being somewhere between 275 and 300 yards.
Total offense, or just throwing?
Herbert. Meaning, if he runs,
I mean, running and passing.
We haven't seen if the kid is going to be mobile yet.
His total yardage, yeah.
But say if he goes out and has a big game like that and they lose a close one, there will be a pause. And there will be some, I guess, length to the leash for Helfrich.
Yeah.
If they get blown out, if they're not competitive, this thing could be really ugly.
When was the last time?
If they pull the upset, he may get an extra year regardless.
When was the last time that you had that thought about Oregon? If they keep it close, it's a moral victory.
Again, a long time. Now, lots of text saying, they were 10-point dogs at home for 50 years and yada, yada.
They were.
I've only been here in Oregon since 2003. Mm-hmm. So that's when I moved here. And Oregon, while they weren't elite, they were good.
Yeah.
And that's the only Oregon that I've seen since I've been here. So this is a new experience for me. It's a new experience for me watching the fan base react, having been now
to Rose Bowls
and national championships and gotten to play in these big games. So this is, for me, this is a new experience watching the fan base react.
But see, that's what I say, because I think for a lot of people, that is, Oregon jumped on the national scene, and I think a lot of people think this is how the Oregon program has been.
Right.
And it's not the case. And, I grew up here, so I know that Oregon was an afterthought for years and years and years, and the Dogs were the team that everybody wanted to beat. There's going to be more Kenny Wheaton jerseys at Autzen Stadium today than anything else. And that's because one of the biggest moments in Oregon's history, one of the turning points in their program, was beating the Huskies.
Right.
And so there is historically this huge rivalry between the teams. It's just been so lopsided for such a long time that I think the Ducks being an underdog is a huge change for a lot of new fans to this rivalry.
Absolutely. And you know what? There's a lot to come, and we're going to talk a lot more about this matchup and the rest of the Pac-12. When we come back, we're going to cover the NFL, and there's a lot of requests from Duck fans. They want a drink today, Luke. They said, I've got beer in me. I'm already drunk. Not sure I can watch games. We've got the answer to that, too, so stick with us in the second hour. Before we can do any of that, though, here's Will Darkins with SportsCenter. Portland, welcome back. Center and Saint, 1080 The Fan. Keith Hill, Luke Anderson hanging out. Hey, Will Darkins, you got an update on my Auburn Tigers?
Just scored again, up 14-0.
I tell you what, it might be the day. Auburn Tigers.
Are they playing Alabama?
Hey, we're going to beat Alabama. Don't you worry.
All right, that's fine.
Don't you worry there, Luke. Cares. Auburn Tigers going to take care of business today. Boy. All right. Yeah. Hey, NFL action.
Oh, yeah?
So you got to be feeling better if you're a Seahawks fan than you felt all year. You had some concerns against L.A., certainly. Well, and now you're on this. You've done nothing since but take care of business. Mm-hmm. You win that game. You saw last week when we were at Vancouver Ford, Suk came out and said, hey, I'm worried about the Hawks because they're playing that early game at the Jets. You and I both said, you know what? We think this might be the turnaround for the Hawks. Now they've got a week to get healthy.
Yeah.
Is there anybody in your division, Luke, that you're concerned about even kind of at this point? Because I watched Arizona, and they didn't look special.
No, they don't. Well, they put on Thursday night,
the Rams have
too,
some kind of kryptonite, you know.
Well,
fine.
They're also 3-1. I mean, it's, you know, they've beaten other teams. It's not like they've just gone out and beaten the Hawks. But, yeah, they for some reason cannot beat the Rams. And I thought it might be St. Louis, but apparently that's not the case. And it's just Jeff Fisher and what he does. But Case Keenum looks like he's a decent quarterback, dare I say?
That's, yeah, I mean, it's a scary thing.
I mean, you go over his
between
last...
Between he and Sam Bradford for MVP, right?
Well, Sam Bradford is one of the most amazing stories of the NFL. The way we crushed him when he demanded a trade when they got Carson Wentz.
Right.
You know, people were just trashing him. He gets paid this money in the offseason to come and stay in Philadelphia. And we go, first of all, why did he get signed and he didn't deserve this money? They go out and spend this time on a first-round draft pick. Philadelphia looks right twice. Looks right. Like they should have kept Sam Bradford, and Carson Wentz was a great pick. I mean, Jared Goff's still sitting on the bench in Los Angeles, but you've got Wentz, who looks like, you know, he's right now competing for Rookie of the Year against Dak Prescott, who's the other quarterback, I think, that surprised a lot of people. But Sam Bradford, you put a team around a quarterback, guess what? It makes them better.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's really shocking. If you put a quarterback on a good team, it's a lot easier to play well than if you're on a bad team your whole career and changing out coaches and coordinators and everything that Sam Bradford's been through, plus just not being healthy for, you know, the start of his career. And you show a guy that is a number one overall pick and you give him a running game, even minus Adrian Peterson.
No, McKinnon?
McKinnon. With an offensive line, it's a lot easier for running backs as well.
Right.
And a great defense. I really think that that's one of the things that you see consistently over time is that guys like Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger and Russell Wilson, if you put a quarterback that has some ability on a good team, it's a lot easier to get better than if you put anyone in the Browns organization. Of course, you're going to fail.
And pause for a second, talking about Brady and the Browns. I heard on another radio station this week, they were looking for someone to take a bet, and I want to know if either one of you gentlemen would take it. $100,000 versus your pinky, the Patriots beat the Browns this weekend and cover. They're 17
wait,
and a half.
Wait, you give me $100,000?
You get $100,000 if the Patriots cover. You lose your pinky if the Browns cover. Would you take the bet? Are you that confident?
What's the spread again?
I think 17 and a half.
Ooh.
That's plenty.
Well,
I would think about it. I mean, you don't need your pinky.
Who
right?
am I betting on? In this scenario?
That the Patriots cover. You get $100,000.
So they win by 17.
Yep.
I want to make sure I understand
this bet.
They win
18 to nothing or better.
My good pinky. Who's paying out the $100,000? I don't trust you
matter.
To pay it off.
And it's a legitimate bet. The money's on the table.
That's a hard one to pick because if you allowed the Texans to score 20-plus uh-huh. points on you, that's a bad sign.
If you get shut out by the Buffalo Bills with or without Brady.
Yeah, it's also kind of a bad
sign. With Jacoby Brissett and with Gronk hurt with LeGarrette Blount hurt, who are all healthy for tomorrow.
I get it. I understand. And you have Brady
back. You're missing your top three weapons who are all back.
Plus, Cody Kessler's kind of playing well.
So you would take the Browns in the scenario? Or you just wouldn't risk your pinky?
17 points is too many. That's the thing about an NFL game. That's what I'll say. Yeah. Because if you have a 24-point lead and you give up a garbage time touchdown, and you know now it's all of a sudden a 17-point game and you lose it by a half point, like that seems
and you just
like,
lost your pinky.
Yeah, that seems like, you know, but
I don't think that's happening though, and I'll tell you why. Brady has been sitting on the sidelines and he doesn't just want to win. I think he wants to hurt people.
I understand that, but you have a 24-point lead, and mm-hmm. you score a garbage-time touchdown that does not matter for the outcome of the game.
And I'm telling you, I don't think there's – I think it's 31-0 by the end of the first quarter. Like, I mean, I think that's a legitimate
again, there's still
bet.
A fourth quarter to be played. Maybe it's two garbage-time touchdowns. I don't care. 14-31.
Have you met
I lose
Bill
by
Belichick?
14-31, I lose by pinky.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that seems like – yeah.
Versus $100,000?
No.
So where do I measure it? Is
yeah,
it,
yeah.
Is
How
it,
much is your pinky worth
Is it a
to you?
Quarter million?
Well, would you take the bet?
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah,
100,000. I might be in for 50, because not because I'm worried about losing my pinky. I'm that confident on the game, so I might be in for 50.
All right, text line 55305. Who's betting their pinky for $100,000 that they win by 17?
So Luke, is it a quarter million? Is it a half million?
Ooh, $250,000. Here's two half million dollars. I think I'd give my pinky up.
Half million, you're definitely in.
Well, I'll tell you what, my sex life sure would take a hit.
Wow.
You have two pinkies. You only have to give up one of them.
Not is it my right pinky?
Not both
okay,
pinkies.
Wow. This is going a dark, right pinky. This is going which, a dark, which, dark place.
Which pinky are you giving up there?
You know what? This one's already been broken so many times. It grew back funky, so I'm probably the one on my left hand.
Yeah, my right one, all the ligaments are torn in my right pinky.
So it'd be your right pinky you'd put on the line?
I think I'd probably. Well, yeah, it's my worst. It's my defective pinky. So.
It's your bad pinky.
It is. Look at the, I don't know, it won't work for radio, but it tends to just flop backwards.
Let's take a picture of that and we'll put it on Twitter.
Yeah, we can
follow Luke at the Luke Anderson.
Luke's bum pinky.
I got a bad pinky. If it was a pinky toe, I'd probably be a lot less money. That's for sure. I would say that.
Okay, pinky toe.
Pinky toe, I'd probably do $50,000.
Would you go 25?
No, probably 50.
I might be able to make 25 happen by the end of the show. That's the only reason I asked.
You can't give up the pinky toe. You know that's what helps you keep your equilibrium, right?
Yeah, I know people without their pinky toes. My equilibrium's not that great. I'm not running the 110-meter hurdles anytime soon. I don't need equilibrium that much to do what I do. I'm sitting in a chair yelling
P1,
about the
P1
duct
Raymond is in.
Recruiting.
He says he's taking the bet because this is Tom's ultimate middle finger game. Pats win by 40-plus.
Yeah, well,
hot take by Raymond.
Listen, Tom Brady's played in plenty of games where they've lost to teams they shouldn't lose to. I don't think this is necessarily one of them, but I wouldn't be all that surprised if the Browns came out and won. Do I think it's going to happen? No, probably not. But it's the NFL, and it's week five. Anything can happen right now. It doesn't mean that the Patriots are bad, and it doesn't mean that the Browns are good. The Browns have competed in their games. The ball bounces in odd ways, and the Browns, in recent history, I'm thinking maybe it was a couple years ago, they were leading the division after 6 weeks, and they had a Patriots win in there, and they tanked the rest of the year.
I'm changing the spread. I was wrong. I was a touchdown wrong.
Oh,
the spread is 10.5.
Oh, yeah, I'd take that. $100,000.
$100,000 in your pinky for 10.5?
Yep.
Will Darkins, 10.5?
Where does the pinky go? At what knuckle do I lose my pinky?
No, it's at the, you know, two.
The low knuckle?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you could safely take 10.5.
Yeah, 10.5.
All right, 55305, would you go $100,000 versus your pinky? 10.5 points.
Yeah.
From the text line, you know, I'd give up my left one. If I lost the right, my golf game would be hurt. That's fair. I get that. You know, give up your left.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I don't think it would affect.
Still make that grip, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think I can still make the grip without my right.
Hurricanes causing havoc all around the Carolina-Tampa Bay game. One, might not be played. Two, it's not on the board because the status of Cam Newton is completely up in the air. At what point do we say, hey, NFL, he's still a quarterback? Or do you feel like at 6'5", 250, the hits are the hits.
We've had this conversation. Hey, Mike Shula, he's your quarterback. If you need him to run in the fourth quarter in a close game, that's different. You don't need to call 5 or 6 designed runs every game to put your quarterback in a position, especially when you know that he's not afraid to lower his shoulder into a linebacker. Part of it is Cam Newton's ego that doesn't allow him to slide. Part of it is Mike Shula's play calling. And the third element is the NFL and what they do with the play calls. Before last year, when there was no roughing the passer or late hits or whatever it was, personal fouls called against Cam Newton, he led the league for the rest of the time that he's been in the NFL, and he still does, even with none last year. So I don't know if it's just a recent trend or because he's now an MVP that you have a different set of rules for him, but you got to stop running him on a first down in the second quarter. That's idiotic to me. You need to protect your quarterback, even though he's big and physical and may not need protection. Protect him from himself.
And I get that, but I'm telling you that we're now watching a team that with Atlanta that specifically said, hey, our game plan is to hit him. Now, they didn't say they were going to hit him in the head, but there were 3 shots helmet to helmet.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 of which are under review by the NFL. 1 they called incidental. 2 shots to the head. So we are seeing now teams who are saying, hey, we know that if we hit Cam Newton in the head, that he has to go out for protocol and we don't have to deal with him. And Derek Anderson comes in. At what point does the NFL say, okay, this isn't okay. I mean, if you hit Tom Brady in the shin, you're suspended, but you can hit Cam Newton in the head.
Yes, because Cam Newton is lowering his shoulder into you in some of those cases. Not in all of them, I realize that, but you can also go and protect yourself. And you never see Eli Manning get hit because he falls down like a rag doll when anybody gets around him. And
he's not fast enough to run.
Well, sure, but that's also self-preservation. I mean, how many times you see Peyton Manning just fall down in a heap where it looked like he was ghost tackled because he's going to get crushed? You live to play another down. Again,
we see this with wide receivers that are getting hit helmet to helmet, and that's always flagged, and there's this big targeting deal, and they get thrown out. Shouldn't we, with the quarterback position, isn't it easier to spot? That's more my question. We're watching as, you know, if there is this play that we slow down and we watch a wide receiver, you know, we watch a corner lead with the crown of his helmet, hit a wide receiver, targeting, flag, you're thrown out of the game, 15 yards, everything's good. But with a quarterback, it seems like all eyes are on you. Isn't that one easier to call?
It might be easier to call, right? But part of the reason we're protecting the wide receivers is because they're not looking to be hit. They're trying to catch the ball. That the defenseless receiver is somebody that their attention is going in a different direction. If you go and pop them just to hit them,
right,
then that's a little bit different than when it's a quarterback who's trying to make a play, has the ball in his hands. I think that's the difference there. I would compare Cam Newton a little more to running backs in this situation, when you almost never see a helmet to helmet called on running backs, that there's very little protection for running backs.
You almost never see a helmet to helmet hit though as well.
Well, sure you do, but a lot of times it's a running back who's initiating the contact. And sure, this is what we talked about after the Broncos game, where you have Cam Newton, who is a moving target, a fast moving target, a target that's bigger than most linebackers in the NFL.
Right.
It's hard to avoid those hits sometimes, because how else do you bring him down? I mean, yeah, you want to go hit him low, but like you said with Tom Brady, you can't hit quarterbacks low anymore.
Right.
So you have to hit him in the middle of the body. You have to hit him with two guys. You have to hit him hard.
And it's too big to bring down that way. So
yeah,
you hit him in the head.
So, I think you aim for his shoulders or hope to hit him in the shoulders. You don't want to penalize your team and put him in a situation where it's not. But again, in the Broncos game, my complaint was the calls weren't being made that could have been made. And when one's not called, guess what? You're going to go and hit him the same way the next time. And if that one's not called, continue as is until somebody corrects your behavior. And that's what the NFL needs to worry about more. If the idea is player protection, focus more on the hits and focus less on these idiotic taunting penalties that are up 230% this year.
Speaking of behavior and correcting it, the beer's not even here yet, and I'm doing this already. This can be bad.
Fine.
Speaking of behavior, Odell Beckham Jr.
What about him? Is he a story? Have we been talking about him this week?
Whether he's swinging his helmet and getting hit in the head with the practice kicking net, or whether he's throwing a fit and the teammates are calling him out, if you're on the Giants, are you siding with OBJ? Or are you siding with the team who's saying you need to calm down and focus in on this game? Because it seems like an emotional Odell Beckham Jr., who's having a good time and is allowed to be himself, is going to have these amazing catches and these amazing performances. This guy, who's under a lot of pressure from his team, when the team calls him out, seems to be shutting down a little bit.
Yeah.
You're the head coach. What are you doing?
Well, I think you're talking to him. I think every team has under their employ a team psychologist, a sports psychologist, somebody that can come in and go, hey, we need to get to you and correct what you're doing. And you know, the correcting behavior is a good angle to take it on. But
do you do it in public, though?
Well, I don't care. Honestly, I don't care, because I think most of these guys come in. He's been a superstar since he came into the league. I mean, as a rookie, he was on a public platform. I think that it's easier and easier to isolate from it because there's more and more noise. I mean, we're one of, 2,000 sports talk shows that are talking about Odell Beckham Jr. today, in this moment, not even just this week. So I think the noise is so prevalent, it becomes white noise at some point. So I don't care about whether or not it's in public. Something that Odell Beckham Jr. said this week, I think indicates that he's either turned a corner or he's close to doing so. And what he did was he said, if I was a kid and I was going to emulate someone's behavior, I would hope that it wasn't somebody that's behaving the way that I am right now. And I think that's really what it is, because he said when he's a kid, all he wanted to do and play in the NFL, all he wanted to do was go out and be like his favorite players in the NFL. And he said that if he has these kids that are emulate what he's doing right now, he's doing something wrong. I hope that that means that he's figured out that he needs to change his behavior. And a lot of times, with all the help in the world, until you decide you're going to change, you're not going to.
By the way, if you're in our fantasy football league, I'm officially putting Odell Beckham Jr. on the table. So give me an offer. Let me know what you want to trade. 55305. Will Darkins has an offer as well.
I told you he's poison at the draft.
I'll tell you this, too. Hey, when we come back, speaking of bad situations, we're going to have a special poll just for you, Luke. We'll talk all about that when we come back. Sinner and Saint, 1080, The Fan. Luke Anderson, you ever have that moment where you come in, back to the studio, we run over and we greet somebody, we have a lot of beer, and we're going to talk about that next hour, but you ever greet somebody, you come back in, and the bumper music is playing, I'm like, hey, are we on the air right now, or are we still waiting for the intro?
Oh, I never know what's going on.
That's the experience I just had there. So welcome back, Sinner and Saint, Keith Hill, Luke Anderson, 1080 The Fan, Sinner and the Saint, and Luke.
Yes, sir.
You know what? We have looked at your poll so many times now over the last several weeks.
You know the freckles, you know the veins.
I decided it was time to look at my poll today. So what I did for you, recently the Seattle Mariners were in a playoff chase, and it didn't end up well for them.
I don't know.
They didn't make it.
They didn't.
They gave it a run.
Yeah. They were on the outside looking in.
I heard a commentator on this station say that they felt like – the Seattle Mariners were the least lucky team in baseball.
Oh.
And I felt like that was not even close to accurate.
No. I think they've had opportunities that they've missed, but
lots of unlucky teams sports.
I'm not sure, certain we've had time to talk about this. The Mariners lost their bid for the playoff race with a runner on second.
Yep.
And Cano, Cruz, Seager were their three outs. So that's not unlucky. That is disappointing is what that is.
That's a little unlucky. I mean, you've got...
Nelson Cruz probably had a single up the middle if it doesn't bounce off the pitcher's leg, but, you know, Cano hit a weak ground ball, and you have your opportunities. You have to seize those opportunities when they're there. You have your three best hitters up all year, and you don't get it. That's disappointing. 2 years ago, when they were in the middle of a playoff race, they had a chance to, if they beat Toronto, it ties them for the wild card. They have Felix on the mound. They lose that game. It's because they didn't have the performance that they needed. You play better, you get it.
So my point of today's poll, I wondered who were the unluckiest teams in all of sports. And I have a list here that are ranking the top 13 unluckiest franchises in all of sports. So 55305, go ahead and text in. Who do you believe is the least lucky or the most unlucky franchise in all of sports? Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of perspective on this. Bad things involving your franchise, involving your star players, and in some cases involving your fans. So least lucky franchises in all of sports. And I've got a list of the top 13. Now, for those of you using
your 13, that's clever.
Right. And as a matter of fact, there are a couple of these lists out there. So I made sure to find one that ranked them in order. And if you're using your Google fingers, the first five that come up or so are in no particular order. So no cheating allowed out there. 55305, least lucky franchise in all of sports. We have our first nomination. It was the Portland Pickles. No, they are not on the list.
They've already beaten me to my first pick, and I'm looking at the Cleveland Browns. And they may not be first, but they've definitely got to be on the list. Where do they fall?
They are second.
Okay.
You hit a home run there. That might be the best entry you've had in this thing yet.
you don't do a lot of pulls, but the Browns, I think of the fumble and the drive, and when your most famous plays are misfortune, I think that's kind of a way to look at it.
And added to that list is LeBron James not being signed as tight end. We've got number two there.
But failed draft pick over failed draft pick. I'm trying to think of a team that has worse luck.
Cleveland Browns came in. Minnesota Vikings.
If I stick with football, the Buffalo Bills come to mind. I mean, you have the best team in the AFC for four consecutive seasons, and they just can't do anything. The missed kick again is, I don't know if it's luck or fortune, but Buffalo Bills got to be on that list somewhere.
And they are lucky number 13. They're at the end of the list, but they are on there.
When your greatest player is O.J. Simpson, I think that's an unfortunate circumstance.
How about the Lions?
The Detroit Lions. Let me take a quick glance. No Detroit Lions. Just being bad is not enough. You have to be actually unlucky. What are the unlucky moments you think about Detroit besides Barry Sanders retiring early?
I mean, the numerous wide receiver bust picks, Joey Harrington getting picked.
From the text line, can't forget about Charles Rogers, Roy Williams, and Mike Williams, all Detroit Lions.
Yeah, for sure. The Blazers are a pick on there. I'm curious if they've made the list. I mean, but I'm trying to think of their unluckiest moments, and they all come in the draft. That's got to be near the top.
Well, not just in the draft, but with injuries.
Well, Brandon Roy going early, but you draft Sam Bowie and Greg Oden.
The Portland Trailblazers do make the list in at number 12.
Okay, I can see that. Another one from the text line is obviously the Chicago Cubs, and it's coming in a few times. And you've got Bartman, you've got all that. And they've just got such a history of it.
And remember that part of the list isn't just, you know, whether you're superstitious or just a little stitious.
Yeah.
The Chicago Cubs are number one on the list.
Yeah, okay. I could kind of see that coming. And part of the reason is the Cubs, their fans are just so quick to write them off. And that's one thing that I've always found is the Cubs are just waiting for a reason to lose. If you haven't watched the 30 for 30 about Bartman, and it goes into a little bit of Bill Buckner, who was also a Cub at one point.
Absolutely.
An all-star for the Cubs. But how quickly everybody sees doom and they rally towards Bartman versus, you know, Alex Gonzalez, who's the sure-handed shortstop who makes an error an inning later, and you lose game six and you go into game seven expecting to lose. That's one of the things about the Cubs that just kind of makes it a little bit fishy. I wonder if my Mariners did make the list in any fashion, because I think they're just bad.
The Mariners were an honorable mention.
Sure.
They did not make
I can see that. Again, it's not necessarily unlucky. It's just
we're missing some significant NFL franchises.
I can see that.
55305. Who do you think is on the list of the top 13 unlucky?
Did we mention the Vikings?
They have not mentioned the Vikings.
Okay,
and
they were on the
text line
as well.
Absolutely on the list. They are third.
Four Super Bowls in the 70s that they've played in. They've lost all of them. So they actually are tied with the Bills. They just didn't do it all in a row.
Well, an NFL first star thing, and they were the first team. They did it before Buffalo did.
Yeah, but they didn't do it. But they also didn't do it consecutively.
That's true.
So they were trumped slightly by the Bills.
Weren't they also involved in the Great Train Robbery?
They were also, remember the, what was it, the Fred Smoot boat gate, or what was that?
The boat party? The big orgy.
Wow, you guys are on one today.
I wonder if the Falcons are on that list, because when you have Michael Vick as one of the emerging stars in the NFL, and he gets busted for dog fighting.
You are looking for an NFL team with a bird, but that ain't it. Real quick,
Eagles?
Back to the Vikings. Yes.
Okay.
The Vikings were also 15-1, and their kicker had not missed a kick all year when they missed a kick to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, but remember the kick that they missed last year, too. I mean, they had the Seahawks dead to rights last year, so...
Cleveland and Philadelphia aren't too far apart when it comes to sports team misfortune.
Yeah.
So you talk about all the issues with the Eagles over the years,
sure.
Whether it's running out of gas in the Super Bowl or whether it was the dream team that went 6-10.
Well, I think this was in our poll last week. The Bengals have the worst winning percentage in playoff history. Are the Bengals on that list?
They're just bad.
Yeah, well, but they've been in a lot of situations where you lose a couple Super Bowls to Joe Montana. I don't think that puts you in a great light. What other sports do we have on the? Do we have any hockey teams?
We have a couple of hockey teams, I'll serve them up for you because we're not really a hockey audience.
That's fine.
Washington Capitals, Toronto Maple Leafs.
I was going to say the Leafs would have been mine.
The list. Yeah. Yep. And so, and the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
So the only guys that we missed out on,
Utah Jazz.
Did not make the list, even though they deserve to be nominated.
I mean, yeah, you're talking about
the New York Mets come in, and they actually come in the list.
Sam,
at
the mailman,
five.
Just texted Utah Jazz right after I said it.
Good for him, Sam. Yeah. He's all over it. And then we missed the Pittsburgh Pirates. They won the World Series the year I was born and haven't done it since.
Well, yeah, so. And you have Barry Bonds, and you know, can never win with him. The Giants probably erased that curse the last few years. But you have the best player in baseball, and Barry Bonds was when he was with the Pirates, I think, too. And then he turns into a juice monster and can never win one with Bonds, but they've cleaned that up. And Madison Bumgarner, what a freaking
stud. Man, yeah, and we'll see a lot more from him in the playoffs. And a matter of fact, that's a great segue, because when we come back, we're going to take a look at a couple of these unlucky franchises that are still in the playoffs. Major League Baseball when we come back. Sinner and Saint, 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.